Welcome to Drinks and Disney Podcast, where I, Stina, sit down with a friend and have an in-depth discussion about a specific Disney movie while we enjoy 2, 3, 4, 5 themed drinks. Part of the fun is the Instagram, at Drinks and Disney, so be sure to follow us there. Also, please rate us on iTunes and leave a fun review if you can. Enjoy!
Yay! Welcome to Drinks and Not Disney. You know, because I do that now. Just too many, like, not Disney-produced animated films that are too good. I can't just ignore them, you guys. Yeah.
Absolutely.
We are here today. I'm very excited about my guest, Kemmer.
Hello.
Kemmer is in Chicago area.
Yes.
And I am in LA area. So, and we're in the time of the snow days.
Is there snow outside? There's nothing but snow outside. We have no houses. We have no roads. It's just snow drifts.
So you're recording from inside a snow palace a la Elsa.
That's correct.
Is what you're telling me.
Yes.
Great.
The weather missed the non-Disney theme.
Yeah. We still got to talk about Disney, even though it's on Disney. I'm going to have Kemmer talk a little bit about herself and what she does and who she is. And if she wants to plug anything, any projects or social needs situations.
I mean, like, I guess if I have to talk about myself, then I can, sure. Christina and I work together on a TV show, which I'm sure your audience has heard all about at this point.
For a long time, I couldn't say what it was.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Sneaky, sneaky.
But I'd be like, I work on a Disney Junior show.
Yes.
But now we can say it. Go watch it.
It's so cute. Oh, and speaking of great music, Wolf Walkers. But yeah.
Incredible.
Incredible music. Well, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. We work on Mirror Royal Detective together. Other than that, I do a couple of other writing projects. My writing partner, Logan Gilbert, and I just finished writing the first season of a fiction podcast, which I'm not sure I can say the name of because it's got a bad word in it. Can you beep it out?
You can.
Settle
it. Please fucking say it.
It is called Clusterfuck. Yes.
We're proud cursors on this podcast.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, exactly what Disney would want.
Exactly.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. So the first season of that premieres on April 1st on Spotify and any other podcast platforms discussing mental health and all sorts of stuff.
Do you have like a...
Sure. Violet wants nothing more than to be a therapist. The catch, she might be a sociopath. So I wanted to see what would happen if those two things were put in one situation. But yeah, it's a dark comedy. I'm excited. We had a lot of fun writing it.
Congratulations. I've wanted to do a narrative podcast for like ever.
There's some really good ones.
Yeah. Me and Cassie, you know, we have our Jammiest Bitch of Jam podcast, storytelling by women. Anyone wants to look it up and listen. Kemmer will actually be a guest later this season on that. So,
will I? Yeah. My goodness.
Spoiler alert. We toyed around briefly with making this season a long narrative that we wrote. But then we got really like, that's so much work. Ah! We immediately backed off, but it is something I've always wanted to do.
You guys should do it. You should totally do it.
I think it would be fun, but I can't wait to listen to yours. Everyone, check it out. Clusterfuck.
Yes.
Right?
Clusterfuck.
Clusterfuck. I love it. Any like social media you want to plug or you good?
Oh, I'm on Instagram as Kemmer Keswani, Keswani. I mostly just post extraordinarily vain selfies and other
and some really good like you do sometimes for a while. I mean, I feel like it's been a while, but maybe my algorithm is not showing you.
It has been a while since I posted music stuff.
Yeah, you do yes. like covers of stuff, which is yeah. like really good. I always enjoy my those.
Favorite guitar is in California where I left him. And the separation has been rough. You know, long distance isn't for everybody. But we're getting through. We're getting through.
I expect long distances with an inanimate object would be even harder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. He doesn't even have an iPhone. No.
He doesn't even answer when I text him.
Mm-mm.
So cool. Yeah. Kemmer has usually lives here, obviously in LA, because she works here on an animation show with me.
Yes.
And usually when she's in LA, she's sitting in an egg. And
it's true. That's the first thing that I did when quarantine hit. I was like, I'm trapped in my house alone. I got to build something. So I ordered an egg chair from Target and assembled it. And
it was
now I sit
the highlight of our meetings for a while. Everyone yes. had to say something.
Everyone was like, are you in a cage? And I'm like, well, emotionally, perhaps.
Awesome. Okay, so today we are covering the most recent movie. Like, out of all the movies I've covered, like, this is like the fastest that I've gotten on one since it was released. So we're doing Wolfwalkers, which premiered on Apple TV in December, and it is so good and so precious. And I was like asking Cameron what she wanted to do, and I was like, it can't be Disney. And that always throws people off because my podcast is called Drinks and Disney. So and the whole time I wanted her to say Wolfwalkers, but then I was like trying to give you, you know, full autonomy of your choices.
you just beamed that thought directly into my brain. At first you were like, okay, so it's not Disney. And I was like, has anybody done Tangled yet? And you were like, so not Disney.
Let me try that again.
Dude, any excuse to talk about Wolfwalkers. I'm so excited.
Yay. Like, yeah.
I'm so excited to talk about this with you.
Gorgeous movie. I'm really excited too. What I'm going to mm-hmm. do. Oh, let's talk about what we're drinking first. Let's do that. So today for Wolfwalkers, Kemmer chose a Irish hot chocolate. Kemmer is not a drinker. Mm-hmm. So it's funny because like I've done a few episodes with non-drinkers, obviously. And another one was hot chocolate. My friend Noelle, we did Fantasia 2000 and we had hot chocolate floats, which was hot chocolate with scoops of ice cream in it.
Oh, I want to make that now.
You should, because it's like one of those things where you're like, why didn't I grow up with this? Like, why isn't this a norm? Because it's like so yeah. delicious and creamy and like very like, you know, like a comfort food. Very, very comfort food. So
oh, yeah.
I recommend to anyone. And also I recommend you listening to Fantasia 2000 because Noelle's a genius and she has lots of cool things to say. So Wolfwalkers, like I said, it was released in December 2020, December 11th, actually. Wait, that was in Ireland. Yeah, December in all the places. Directed by Tom Moore and Ross Stewart. Cartoon Saloon is a production company. And it was written by Will Collins. And it stars, do you know any of the actors who play?
Yeah, I know them from some other things too. But the mm-hmm. main girls was Ava Whitaker and is it Honor Neefney? Did I say it right? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure. And then Sean Bean is there.
He's always there. Don't worry about it. Sean Bean is there.
He's there. And then Maria Doyle Kennedy, who's like this, she's a singer, and she, I know her from the show Orphan Black, because she plays this incredible character on there. So she popped up on the voice cast, and I was like, Mom! Oh my god! She plays the mom.
Any other name?
I don't remember the other ones.
That's totally fine. They're like, everyone else is probably playing just like random characters. Simon McBurney, Tommy Tiernan, and John Kenny, and John Morton are like the other.
John.
Lots of Johns.
Uh-huh.
It's a COVID time release, so the box office is not probably what it would be. But do you have a guess as to what the box office is?
Isn't it like 240,000-ish?
Pretty close. It's almost 230,000.
Oh, 229 then.
Yeah.
Not 239.
It's pretty close. Yeah, but I mean, we can imagine that if it wasn't COVID times, it would be much higher, I'm sure.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
This film deserves it.
Now, synopsis time.
Okay. I will do my utmost to keep this brief.
I'm just going to sit back and relax. This is my break time when you guys do the synopsis.
You can see how many notes I took on this. Like, this is a paragraphs long.
I love it.
Notes page. Like, I will keep it brief. Long story short, a young girl named Robin, 13-year-old girl named Robin, and her father Bill moved to a small Irish town called Kilkenny in the year approximately 1650. They are brought there by the Lord Protector Oliver Cromwell, who is, you guessed it, a jackass. And the father Bill is supposed to, he was enlisted to help kill the wolves that are ravaging the woods around this town. And, you know, their continued existence and the safety of this town is kind of dependent on whether or not he accomplishes that goal. One day, Robin follows her father into the forest, despite the fact that he says it's horribly dangerous and she should not leave the town under any circumstances. But she's very headstrong and she has a tiny little crossbow that she wants to put to good use, slaying wolves. While they're out there, I don't want to go through all of the plot events because, like, this film is so well written. Like, it never slows down too much. It doesn't, like, we'll get into it later. Anyways, Robin's falcon gets injured. A strange girl takes the falcon and she's like, my bird, Merlin, like, he's gone. He's like my best friend. Her dad is like, no, it's too dangerous to go into the woods and find him. We're going back to town. She returns to the forest the next day to try and find her best friend, Merlin, the falcon. And she sees this, like, strange girl again. And then, like, she runs into the woods to try and find her. And then there's a wolf attack. It's terrifying, scary wolf attack. Robin tries to, like, fight the wolf. Doesn't go well. She gets caught in a trap. She gets bitten by this wolf. And then it turns out the wolf was trying to save her the whole time because the wolf is the girl. And she is a wolf walker. But the wolf is the girl. She has healed Merlin, the falcon, as a gesture of good faith. She heals Robin's wolf bite in order to prevent her from turning into a wolf walker. She's like, we can't let it be too late. Otherwise, you know, you'll be a wolf walker forever. This is going on forever. I'm so sorry, Christina. I can't stop talking about this movie. Fast forward, they frolic around the forest for a while. They bond over their general yearning for freedom. You know, Maeve's family. Maeve is the wolf girl. Forgot to say that. Maeve's family, there's only her and her mother left, which almost made me cry like 20 minutes into this movie. And they're looking for a safe place to go because they can't stay in this forest because the hunters are trying to hurt them and their wolf pack. And Robin is just tired of, like, being forced to stay in this town and not being allowed to do what she wants, being forced to work at the scullery. It's horrible. So much ancient sexism going on.
It's so gross.
So I know. I'm like, Lord Protector can bite it, honestly. So Robin goes back to town, talks to her father, and she's like, Dad, like, I found a solution to the wolf problem. They're wolf walkers. They don't want to be here. They just want to leave. And her dad is like, that's ridiculous. Wolf walkers aren't real. What are you talking about? Stop saying this or you're going to get us all kicked out of town. And she's like, fine, I will begrudgingly do my duty and go to the scullery. While she goes to the scullery the next day, she finds this secret room. And inside the secret room, there's a giant cage. And inside the cage, something is talking to her. She can't see what it is. It's covered over with this big old nasty looking tarp. Before she can find out what it is, she's dragged out of the room with the warning that if the Lord Protector finds her in there, she is going to get in big old trouble. This is where it starts to get just very stressful and then doesn't stop being very stressful for the rest of the film. That night, Robin, in her sleep, turns into a wolf. And it is the most beautiful sequence, truly. She goes on this, like, she runs to the forest to tell Maeve and be like, what is happening to me? And they go on this, like, beautiful, like, we can talk about, like, the animation that they use at this part, but it's this moonlit adventure through the forest. And Robin's like, okay, I gotta get back to town. Has it been, like, 20 minutes?
No, you're fine. You're fine. I just want to point out what is happening to me. It sounds like Les Mis.
Oh my god!
Wow. Just like,
this movie just speaks to the soul, you know.
I was just like, Lavere. Okay.
This is now a musical podcast.
Makes you break out in
Les Mis. Oh my gosh. Yes.
Okay, keep going.
We're halfway through, by the way. The midpoint of the film. Robin runs back to town and she kind of catches this magical essence coming from the Lord Protector's keep where she saw that, like, cage the other day. And she's like, I gotta know what that is. Okay, I gotta know. So she sneaks in and it turns out trapped in the cage is the wolf spirit of Maeve's mother. And... yeah, I did cry a little bit at this part as well. It's fine. So Robin is like trying to free her, but her little tiny wolf paws can't open the lock. Lord Protector finds them, of course, and decides that it's about damn time that he proves to the town that he has mastered the wolves. So the next day in the town square, he decides that he's going to prove it by muzzling up this glorious wolf spirit. And kind of parading her in front of the town and being like, look at this, I am powerful. And there's all these, you know, religious undertones of him trying to quote unquote civilize this town with God's word and stuff. Oh God, my heart is beating so fast just remembering this sequence. Maeve runs into town because she's tired of waiting for Robin to show up. And at the same time, Maeve sees her mother, like, muzzled up on this stage in front of all these people. So she's like, she's just like this ball of pain at this point where she's like, my mom is trapped. Like, my only friend, like, hid this from me. She knew my mother was here. Like, how could you do this? And so Maeve goes on this, like, badass little ball of rage rampage, trying to free her mother, fighting off the Lord Protector. Chaos breaks out in the town square. And the Lord Protector orders Robin's father to shoot the wolf. Robin jumps. Robin, girl, I love you for this. She jumps between her father's crossbow and the wolf and is like, you can't kill her. She's a wolf walker. And he's like, why? Like, why are you protecting her? And she's like, I'm one of them. And I'm like, oh my God. I was having a time watching this. Okay. Like, the emotions are so real.
Definitely emotionally compromised, for sure.
I will do my best. I'm gonna get through the rest of this summary, I promise you. Within the next, like, hour at most. So they run back to the forest, Maeve, Robin, and the mother wolf. And Maeve forgives Robin for hiding this from her. She's like, you know, I understand why you did it. I know you're trying to, like, help me, but, like, we're a pack. We have to stay together. And then just as they're making up, of course, Bill shoots the wolf mother in the chest.
Freaking sad dads and their crossbows.
I was like, all right, sir, we get it. You have a weapon. Mm. So the wolf spirit just like drifts into the sky and goes back to the wolf den. And there's this very like somber, like almost funeral procession back towards the den. All of the other wolves in the pack have gathered around them at this point and are kind of shepherding Maeve and Robin back. At this time, of course, the Lord Protector's army is preparing to burn down the forest and smoke the wolves out, which, you know, stellar plan, man. I'm guessing there were at least like 8 steps he could have taken before jumping to like environmental destruction. But
yeah, the woods that he's trying to protect. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Whatever. You know, God told him to do it. Ugh. Yeah, I'm like, okay, interesting choice. So Maeve is trying to heal her mother in the den, and Robin and the other wolves are like, okay, Robin's like, we're gonna hold back the army. So they all rush out into the forest. They're winning for a while. You know, it's hard to beat a wolf in a forest at night when you're wearing like heavy 17th century plate armor. And then Maeve, back in the cave, realizes that she needs the pack there to heal the mom. So she summons them back with a dramatic howl at the moon. They all rush back to the cave. On their way, Robin sees the cannon that the army has brought. And she's like, all right, I gotta stop that cannon. It's going to destroy everything. So she successfully does. She makes the cannon fire in on itself, and she gets knocked out when it happens in the blast. Bill witnesses all of this. He watches his daughter sacrifice herself to try and save these wolves. And this is when Bill realizes that maybe he fucked up. So the Lord Protector is about to kill his daughter in wolf form. And Bill gets absolutely enraged. And he transforms into a wolf. During the fight earlier in the square, he got bitten by Mole, the wolf mother. And he is now a wolf walker as well. So he's tangling with the Lord Protector. They're fighting. He's protecting his daughter in the right way for the first time in this movie. And he ends up dangling the Lord Protector over a cliff. And at this point I was like, oh my God, they're like, this is like, is this a children's film? I'm not entirely sure anymore. Like, I'm honestly not sure. And then the Lord Protector loosens his fancy looking belt and just like lets himself fall into this waterfall with like this dramatic prayer to God. And I'm like, buddy, this is not God's word, I promise you. And at that point, I knew it was certainly not a children's film. After this gruesome on-screen death, it's really not that bad. It's there was no other way it was going to end, you know? Robin wakes up, returns to the cave, sees that her father is now a wolf, takes him with her. And with the whole wolf pack assembled in there, Maeve is finally able to heal her mother. And her mom wakes up in her human body for the first time in the movie, and Maeve gets to hug her mama. And the whole wolf pack, complete with 2 new wolf walkers, goes off on a new journey towards a land where they will hopefully be allowed to be free and be themselves for the first time. The end.
Oh, that was so good! That was so good! Thank you! That was perfect. I loved every moment of it. I feel like I was more emotionally affected by you telling it and when I watched the movie.
Because I was like half in tears for most of it.
But it was so good. Thank you so much.
Glad to.
Okay, we're going to do the quiz.
Oh God, already?
Yeah, it's time.
Oh my God.
Are you ready? You've already answered some of these, so
okay.
Don't worry about it.
All right, let's see if I remember what I said.
And if you want to look at your notes, I'm totally fine with that. It can be open book. Okay. Number 1. What year does the story start in?
1650.
Yeah. Yep, you said it and I was like, damn it. That's a good question. Number 2. How much is a cup of donkey's milk?
Oh, shit. Well, you stumped me. It's, I don't know, two something. I forget what their currency is.
I know. Well, I didn't know at first, and then she said what it was. So it's two farthings.
Yes. Farthings?
Two farthings.
That makes sense. That sounds historically
accurate.
What
is Mabe's last name?
Isn't it like Alkneary? I can't say it right.
It's.
I'm sorry to any.
I know. I'm going to also butcher it, so apologies. But.
No, it's Alkmatiri? No.
It's Alk. It is. Alkmatiri. Alkmatiri.
I love when she comes on for the first time and she's like, ah, Maeve Alkmatiri! Yeah. And Robin's like, what?
Cool.
She's like, okay.
What are town tasties?
Oh, it's like bread mostly. Maeve's like obsessed with anything baked from the town.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was another thing that she steals in that one scene. Yeah. I remember the bread because it looked so appetizing. I don't remember what the second one was.
Animated food always looks so good.
Right? This movie is like almost on like the Ghibli level, except there's not as much focus on the food, I think. There's still clear care put into the food. Mm-hmm. What's the second one?
It's actually bread, spuds.
Oh, it's the spuds. That's right.
And milk.
I was cracking up when they just grabbed an entire potato and then Maeve just shoved it in her mouth. I know. Like, girl, you get it.
Also, the little I guess it's like a gallon of milk that they steal in the jug, and they like drop it, and it's the thing that like springs the bear trap. Yeah. Which I thought was funny. This is the third in the director's Irish folklore trilogy. What are the other two films?
Secret of the Kells and Song of the Sea. Is that right? Secret of Kells.
Number six. What Netflix film series is the voice of Robin Honor? I forgot his last name already. A part of.
Film series?
Yes. There's been three of them.
Oh, I don't know. I don't watch movies on Netflix. Can I have a hint?
It's a Christmas movie. They're Christmas movies. You're not going to know. It's fine if you don't
know. I don't think I do.
I just found out she was a part of these and I got like a little bit mad because they drive me crazy.
Oh, no.
But she's a part of the Christmas Prince series.
No. What?
No. Which are trash.
I heard.
Oh, yes. I mean, not to be confused with, wait, yes. Oh, the Princess Switch?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is Vanessa Hudgens doing her best.
Yes.
But Christmas Prince is a zombie girl. I'm blanking on her name.
It's not Rose McIver.
Is
that what she did after iZombie?
Yeah.
Girl, no.
Yeah.
Oh, sweetie.
So, Honor, the girl who plays Robin, plays the younger sister of the Christmas Prince in question.
The Christmas Princess.
The Crimson Princess.
The Crimson Princess. Merry Krivenin.
Mary Chrysler. The problem is, and I don't know, is she disabled in real life? Because
oh, no.
In the movie, she's disabled.
I don't know the answer to that, but if not,
yeah,
well, yikes.
She might be. I might be giving her flack for no reason.
Roasting a child on a podcast.
This child who's just doing her best.
She's incredibly talented as a voice actress. I was amazed with the voice acting in this
film. Yeah, she Let me see. She is not disabled in real life. Okay.
Well, Christmas Prince, you have something to answer for.
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's not her fault.
No, you don't blame the child.
Number 7, in the original version, which character was supposed to be a boy?
Robin.
Augmentiri, which is pronounced wrong, and also Mabe's last name, translates to what?
Of something, probably of the woods, if I had to guess.
It's,
I don't know.
Young wolf.
Oh, for yeah. Fucking serious? This is my child, Wolfie Mick of the Wolves. Remus yeah, Lupin. Exactly.
Which is funny because it's like, isn't her mom's last name that too?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Presumably.
So, there can only be one.
Wolf of the Wolves.
There can only be young, so many young wolves. I don't know, whatever.
Oh, yeah. Wait. Question.
Robin Goodfellow is named after what other fictional character?
Robin Hood. If I had to guess, I don't know.
No.
Isn't he?
No!
Damn. This is the worst I've ever done on a quiz in my life, Christina.
No, you've actually done really well, I promise you. Other people have failed so hard. Robin Goodfellow is also a character, a name of a character in Midsummer Night's Dream.
Oh. Huh. Mm-hmm. Don't tell my English literature minor teachers. They don't need to know that I didn't know that.
Mums. Would. And then the last question. All the crew's dogs were given credit as what?
Are you serious? That's so cute. As the wolves?
Okay. Kind of, yeah.
I don't know.
They were the wolf consultants.
Wolf consultants? That's so the cutest shit I ever heard in my life.
I know. It's so cute. I love it so much. It's my favorite bit of trivia from this
movie. Oh, that's wonderful.
Okay. Well, I say you did great on the quiz. Like, honestly, people have done, like, full trash before. So
those were good questions. I say,
thank you. I'm going to give you a, what, just like grade you.
Oh my God, it's a grade?
I give you a B+.
Oh, God damn it. Don't. My mom is Asian. I can't get a B+ and go home. I'm kidding.
I promise not to tell your mom.
No, but it's really cool to hear about all that stuff. Like, I studied mostly, I looked up a bunch of the stuff about the production and the different animation styles that they used. Mm-hmm. I didn't know they had wolf consultants, though. That's so cute.
I know, which was, I was delighted mm-hmm. when I saw this trivia. I love Mal. I love her design. I'm, like, obsessed with her. She's so gorgeous, and she gives me, like, very rose quartz. Very plus size representation, which I'm like all about. Mm-hmm. One day I hope to possibly cosplay as her.
You should. Oh my God.
I think she's so beautiful.
That wig would be incredible to put together.
Yeah, I would love it. Yeah. And then I'll put, I don't know, if I have a daughter, I'll throw her in a.
Please do.
In a Mabe costume. That would be so cute, right?
So adorable. Ricky's there as your resident wolf representation.
Those dumbass wolves that follow them around.
I love them.
I know. I love them too, but they're like, the second time I watched it, I was like, these wolves are so dumb.
Oh, yeah.
They're just like, you know, bees in a hive, basically. But they're like so silly and cute. And they're just like dogs. They're just like, bleh.
Yep. They're big old puppies.
They're big old puppies. They're so cute. But yeah, I also felt like Merlin the Hawk was definitely on par with Pascal for like best animal best friend.
Oh, I love that.
He's like very...
Yes, I agree.
Very that, right? Very on the same level.
Mm-hmm. It's nice when the animal companion isn't just there to like be dumb and goofy, mm-hmm. and it's like actually a character. Because like there wouldn't have been a story if Merlin hadn't been like, no, this girl is nice, let's follow her, exactly. Which he said obviously in bird words and not human words.
Totally.
But
totally. Yeah. Merlin was like always just checking everyone and being like, are you sure? It's true.
Merlin, vibe check.
Yeah.
Right.
He definitely was.
Well, on the subject of character design, I also wanted to talk about that because I especially loved Maeve's animated parts where she's like jumping across rooftops and stuff like as a little like wolf girl because she just like turns into just like blob of hair and it's so cute. She's just a little ball of energy.
The forced perspective of the town rooftops was very interesting.
Yes.
Because they show it as if when you watch it, you that and they're like jumping along the roofs. They look bigger than they are.
Mm-hmm.
Like Maeve and Robin both are like, if you actually saw that in real life and it was to scale of what they're representing, they're fucking huge on those rooftops. Like, huge child on the roof.
Massive. That's
so funny. And it works really well with the aesthetic of the film and also like, you know, like they gotta get places. Yes. So whatever. We're not gonna like spend 15 minutes watching them struggle to jump from roof to roof.
Just running across a roof for like 10 straight minutes.
Parkouring all over the city.
They do that, you know?
I think they do that.
Yeah. It does contribute so much thematically to like what Robin is going through because the town feels small and suffocating. And I think it is certainly drawn that way, especially on those like super pulled out shots where it's just like the top down view of the town and you see how clustered up all of the houses are. And I'm like, yeah, I wouldn't want to live there. Yeah. I feel like a Ritz cracker trapped in the box.
Yeah. Wow. I love that.
My mom bought Ritz crackers today. I saw them earlier in the kitchen.
And you were like, that looks familiar.
Inspiration. Can come from anywhere.
Life begets art. I think that's really true. The whole town is, especially because Robin always talks about England and how free she was there and how she had such a different life and felt more herself and more, like I said, freedom. And this town, it literally has a wall around it. It literally looks like a prison. It's just chock full of people, chock full of buildings. And it's like sad. It's like not fun.
The discrepancy in the color palette for the town versus for the forest. It's just like, oh, the saddest, most washed out earth tone colors, not even warm earth tones, but just like stone, gray, cold. And then the forest is like just absolutely bursting with sunlight and green and like even the dirt in the forest looks happier than the town.
Well, and they have that moment at the beginning of the movie where Robin is following her dad and tracking him through the town. And then they like meet up and they all like, it's very reminiscent of Tangled in the scene where they're dancing in the town. And like, there's like a band playing and people are having fun. And it actually seems like, oh, this won't be too bad. But then that's the moment when the soldiers show up and Lord Protector and his bullshit. So then it immediately stops. And the rest of the movie, the town is gray and sad and rainy and feels like a prison.
Yeah, they give you that one moment of like, oh, you thought,
yeah. Surprise. And I think, I mean, it's obviously like, I have a note here, like the British were and are kind of totes the America of like the United of the what am I
the America of the United States.
I'm gonna start that over because I fucked it up so bad.
It's amazing.
The British were totes the America of Europe back then. There we go. Because they're like...
Well, America learned from someone.
I know. Well, yeah. We just learned from mom. So, because, yeah, it's just like that thing where fucking Lord Protector, he's like the worst of type of villain for me. First of all, he's a man, so that already counts against him.
Quite against him.
Second of all, like me watching the Cruella trailer and being like, maybe puppies aren't that bad for a coat. You know?
We are discussing wolf walkers. Cover the wolf's ears. Cover Ricky's ears. How dare you?
So,
goodness.
But he also has that Frollo, Count Frollo energy of like
massive.
Religion.
Yeah.
And like his own interpretation of what God wants. And that is what God wants, which is one of my least favorite tropes about this time era. And then also his, you know, his complete and total like disregard for women in general.
Yeah. To the scullery.
To the scullery with you. That's where women belong. And I
gross.
Just, he was like, me and Jared watched it with me, and he's like a perfect mix of Count Frollo from Hunchback and I forgot his name, but the guy from Pocahontas.
Oh,
it's not Radigan, because that's a rat from, but his name is Rat, I think. Is it?
I sure don't know now. In my mind, I'm just picturing like Ratatouille.
This is how you know I haven't done Pocahontas yet, because I would remember.
That movie's got a lot to unpack.
Oh yeah, I know. I gotta pick the perfect person to unpack that. So he's like the ultimate I hate him villain. There's no like silver lining in that situation.
Yeah, no, he takes the religious zealotry and violent colonialism and puts them together in one like horrible package. Plus like just a little dash of misogyny.
Oh yeah.
Which
means so much. It takes it so far.
Yep.
I'm always just like, for characters like that, I'm like, okay, you have this idea of what God wants and what a perfect world looks like, but like, what? But then what? Like, obviously it's not working. People are miserable. Like, I don't know. I just don't understand people. I hate them.
I hate how accurate it is to that time period in terms of how England would colonize places, because they absolutely used that kind of religion as like, they put it, it gives religion a really bad rap, because it's supposed to be like faith and something that makes people feel safe.
Yeah.
And they used it to oppress people violently. Like not a good move. Not what God would want. Like any God.
Any loving God would be like, how about you don't?
Yeah.
How about you chill? Anyway. Work is prayer. Fucking vomit all over you.
I'm disgusted. Disgusted.
I'll take zero of it. Thank you.
Yeah, find me that passage in the Bible that says that women should work every day of their lives in a scullery. Now I'm like all fired up about colonialism.
I know. I know.
I think I did read an interesting thing that referenced some stuff the directors had said about, like, yes, this is very much like about England's colonization of Ireland and stuff. And
yeah,
while I was watching that film, like that's obviously very clearly there as like the foremost layer of what's going on. But I think that, I don't know if that would have been enough to just carry the movie, because I don't think that Robin as a 13-year-old child would fully have understood all that. So I really appreciated how much it focused on her being like, well, this doesn't make any sense. Like, why is it like this? Why won't you go out past the wall? Why is everybody so afraid? Because it's very much, it's,
yeah,
it's like, yeah, what are we teaching kids? Like those other kids in town who are all so nasty mm-hmm. and hateful already. Like they weren't born like that. They learned that from watching the soldiers.
We are homeless?
I don't know what's going on. I guess.
They're like out in the rain. Like, yeah, go home. Maybe. It's raining.
Probably a good way to teach the next generation to fear the wolves if they have to sleep outside where the wolves are. Mm-hmm. It's pretty messed up.
Great. Good job. Top-notch parenting, you guys.
Lord protector, protecting like a lord.
Ew, I hate it so much.
I want to punch
The
him.
Other thing is, speaking of parenting, or lack thereof, Robin's father is... Okay. Hold on. That's a different point about him. What I will say about his parenting is there's, you know, it's a trope. It's normal. This movie is very, it reminds me a lot of How to Train Your Dragon in the relationship between the father and the child. I always am shook by how fathers, especially sometimes mothers, in narrative pieces just don't know their child at all. And for Robin and Bill, I feel like he let her be free in England, obviously. He let her be that happy and be free and be like who she was. And yes, there is a lot of danger in this, in Belfast where they end up. But it's like he doesn't, you know, he doesn't try to understand it from her point of view. As someone who used to be able to do whatever she wanted, and had the support of her father in that, to now. And he's just like, you have to suddenly change everything about you just because we moved somewhere, you know? And obviously that's like a very real thing that happens for people. With their parents. But I don't know. I don't know. Maybe with my parents, it was never really a thing for us. Like my parents were always really good about like letting us express who exactly we were and having the contextual, you know, intelligence of like dealing with us in that way. But I know that other parents don't. So maybe I'm just speaking out of my own, like, you know, privilege of having those parents.
Well, I'm happy for you, but also fuck off with that. I was thinking a lot about that dynamic while watching the movie. I mean, it's like, it's kind of the central relationship of what needs, it starts out as a primary conflict.
Totally.
I think the reason that I saw that he became so suddenly overprotective was because the mother had died right before they left England.
I
love, this sounds a little weird, I love grief thematically. It does such interesting things to people. It does such interesting things to characters. Yeah. And I can absolutely see him panicking and like trying to overprotect this daughter of his who he's so afraid of losing after losing another person who he loved. And like my favorite way that they used that theme, I agree, it's very annoying. Cause like as a queer kid who was not allowed to express himself for a very long time, watching this like young girl be like forced into this specific gender role, I was like, girl, I feel it in my soul. Like, man, I wish I'd been a wolf when I was 14. That would have been sick. But the evolution of this overprotectiveness theme where the dad goes from trying to shield her from every possible negative experience in the world and that ends up taking a toll, and then seeing how Robin does the same thing to Maeve by trying to keep her. She's like, I won't tell her about her mother because that'll just upset her. I'll try and keep her safe by convincing her to leave. And then Maeve is like, obviously I'm not happy with that. Like she would have rather known the truth. Robin would have rather had her father listen to her. So I love when that sort of thing happens with themes where it like, it's just, you see the reiteration in a different character. And then watching that character, watching Robin break mm-hmm. that cycle and choose forgiveness and empathy for these people who ostensibly are not like her. That's my shit, man. That's the good shit right there. That's the town tasty.
Now that's a town tasty.
I'm going to start saying that and people are going to be like, what the fuck?
The other point I wanted to make about Bill.
Oh, Bill.
Sean Bean. He's legit so bad at his job. Like,
he's so bad
at it. I don't know how he got it. He has zero skills in the job that he was hired to do.
Mediocre men failing up in the world.
I was like, he has not done anything right once for this job, which is good in the long run. But
yeah, true.
Why did he get hired?
So funny. I loved that Maeve was just like fucking with his traps the entire time. Like it was a game for her almost. She's like, I see what you're trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now it's broken.
Oops.
That's so true. He never once accomplishes anything that he sets out to do.
He fails at everything he does. Which is not to like say he's a failure or he's bad or whatever. It's just like, I mean, maybe he just needed to turn into a wolf. But I honestly feel like that is true for everyone.
Honestly, I vibe with it. For sure.
If only we could just turn into wolves. I was thinking, you know, they're a human when they're awake, they're a wolf when they're asleep. And I would be like, that sounds legit, except for... could I have like a couple nights a week where I just sleep? That sounds exhausting.
I turn into a wolf when I'm asleep and curl up and fall asleep again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
That's fine. I just don't think I could be like alive every night.
Oh, so you know? True. Yeah. I'm really glad that you brought that up because that was another thing that I wanted to touch on was like that whole concept. I did notice at the end that it broke with Maeve's lore of her being like, it happens when you fall asleep because Bill just like transformed because he got so angry. So, you know, I'll forgive that because it's like a 10-year-old trying to explain this mystical, magical, like long centuries old thing that happens to her and her mother.
Totally.
So like, I'm fine with that, whatever. But I loved the whole concept of turning into a wolf when they sleep, just because it's like such a cool metaphor for lucid dreaming. It's like, it's such a vivid thing. Mm-hmm. And the animation style they use to express it with like wolf vision, they called it wolf vision. I'm like, hell yeah. Hit me with that wolf vision where it turns, they close their eyes and they can still see and like all of these beautiful vivid colors. Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that everything because the colors are supposed to be the scent of what because they see the scents. So like I think Merlin was like a blue and then like Maeve was like a gold. Mm-hmm. What's that thing called where you like when you see colors when you hear
synesthesia?
Yeah.
So I have synesthesia. And when I listen to music, I see colors and it's like almost the exact color palette that they used for the wolf vision. So like that sequence hit and I was just like, yes, this is so cool. Like I was just grinning so wide at the screen. Oh, so cool.
Wait, you have it?
Yeah. The kind that I have is different from the one that they, like in the movie, it's smell and sight are correlated for them. Mine is sound and visual.
Right.
Yeah. So like people's voices have different colors to me and different instruments, whatever. It's very cool. Yeah.
I have so many questions now.
You're welcome to ask them on this podcast or otherwise.
Welcome to synesthesia conversations. I've just changed my podcast.
Yeah.
That was just an amnesia podcast.
But it is, it's such a difficult thing to explain to people, and then this movie shows you it. And I'm like, yes, people will watch this and understand. Like, it's cool.
Did you ever read that book, Mango Shaped Space?
No. But
okay,
I understand what that means.
Amazing. Yeah, it's a YA book about a girl with synesthesia.
Yes.
And what she kind of goes through. It's so good. It's like one of the only books that's made me burst into tears.
Oh, I'm so going to read that. Thank you.
Yeah, you'll love it.
Yes. Excellent. There are certain forms of it that can be very intrusive to people's lives.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I've heard of those, of people who've really it's almost it's like a suffering because it's so intense.
Yeah. I knew one girl in high school who, she was absolutely freaking brilliant in every area, except she had the hardest time spelling words. Because to her, every single letter had its own color, and every single word on its own as a set had its own color. And if the letters' colors clashed with the words' colors, she was like, no, this letter doesn't fit here.
Oh, wow.
So that was a major challenge.
Yeah, yeah. I could see that. I could totally see that.
Yeah. She didn't figure it out till she was 15 or 16. Was like, why have I always been so bad at spelling? And it's like, because your brain is wired like this.
What color is my voice?
It's a very sunny orange with pink streaks in it, which I'm sure you're pleased with, but it is.
I'm smiling so hard right now. All right, I need to make a mental note not to ask you what every color of every sound is. Okay. Leave Kemmerer alone about synesthesia.
One thing that I absolutely freaking love, I love talking about it, don't even, but one thing that I love about working on Mira is that the color palette of the show matches the color palette of the score and the music.
That's amazing.
Watching it is just such a, it's such a good sensory experience.
I can totally see that.
Watch Mira Royal Detective on Disney Junior.
Watch it, you guys. Yeah, no, I can totally see that. I mean, it's just it's just such a fully realized aesthetic, that show. So shout out to Dorothea, our director, who's a queen.
I could rave about the midpoint sequence forever with
so beautiful
the combinations of animation styles. And I read that they used three different styles. There was regular 2D, hand-drawn, and then 3D, I assume for the town. I was amazed with how they integrated that so seamlessly. Cause I feel like usually when I watch things that use 2D and 3D, it's on a scale from pretty obvious to glaringly obvious and distracting when there's 3D stuff that shows up. Mm-hmm. And then the wolf vision was its own thing that they developed for this movie.
And it's so stylized. You don't even categorize it as 3D almost. I don't really in my brain.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's like what you just said, the stairs in Little Mermaid are the only 3D thing in that movie. And they're so glaring. It's just whoa, what is
so
that?
Obvious sometimes. Who put that Lego set on this movie?
I think, let's see. When Robin's dad kept being Lord Protector says, the Lord Protector, and kept talking about the Lord Protector. And Jared was just like, if the Lord Protector told you to suck his dick. And I was exactly.
Jared with the real commentary. I just realized something when you brought that up, though. The fact that Bill keeps referencing the Lord Protector's directions is a direct parallel to the Lord Protector referencing God's directions. Mm-hmm. And so the Lord Protector has just made himself a stand-in for God. And then the Lord Protector is using God's word to do whatever the fuck he wants. And Bill is using the Lord Protector's word to do what he wants and try and keep his daughter safe. Trickle down authoritarianism. We love to see it. We don't love it.
Maeve has a chunk out of her left ear, I think. And Ricky also has a chunk out of his ear. So Ricky's definitely a wolf walker.
Yes.
Confirmed. And so I don't know. Let's see. He's sleeping right now. So wait. I don't know.
Oh my God.
He's somewhere.
He's a reverse wolf walker. He turns into a human when he sleeps. He's just out like wandering Hollywood.
Maybe he's looking for me as a human.
Yeah. Poor guy. Nobody gives me treats in this form.
He's walking around being like, have you seen my mom? Have you seen my mom? Speaking more about the animation style and the art, one of the things that I love about this movie, obviously, is, and this is the same for Secret of Kells, is you can see a lot of like sketch lines and stuff sometimes in different scenes, which gives it a very like, oh, someone worked on this. You know what I mean? Like, that's somebody's line that drew that. It brings it back down to earth in a way that I think like the most perfect animation wouldn't. And I just love, I also noticed the second time I watched it that those lines are much more pronounced in the end of the movie when there's a lot of the trauma is going on and a lot of like the, you know, the climax of the battle and stuff. That's when a lot of those are really prevalent and really like, and I think it adds to the chaos of what's going on and all that. So
that's so interesting. I guess I got to rewatch it now. Oh,
oh no.
No.
Oops.
I want to see that. That's so interesting. Yeah. But I agree with you. It totally feels like it's come to life out of somebody's sketchbook, and it feels so personal and so like full of love. I think it's really cool that it, the art style feels so connected to just like the feeling of folklore. So I know what you mean by that. It's like it, it makes it feel like the person who's making the movie like has this connection to whoever told them the story.
Yeah. Yeah. And it feels, you're like, oh, there's, it's just humanizes it so much where you're like, you know, who, it's almost like a who is this movie?
Yeah.
Instead of a what is this movie?
So. I love that. Oh, I love that way of thinking about it. Yeah.
It's gorgeous. It's so beautiful. And I can't wait to see what Cartoon Saloon does more.
Yeah. Very excited to see.
I need to watch Song of the Sea.
I watched the trailer for it and it's about Selkies, which is just immediately a point of interest for me because, like, folklore and mythical creatures, I'm like, you got me. You got me right there.
Yeah. I love a good Selkie tale.
There's not enough.
There's not enough. I used to read a lot of Selkie, like, YA stuff.
Oh, really?
Like, in high school.
It's a great sort of, like, it's a great myth to work with for YA romance, totally. I'm sure.
For sure. I mean, anything where it's like you turn into something.
Mm-hmm.
Or your boyfriend is turning into something. Or your girlfriend is turning into something.
I'm just thinking about the 13th year, that Disney movie. Yeah. It becomes a mermaid. Like, ha.
Yes. So good. That movie slaps. I need to do that one too. As we're singing Running with the Wolves by Aurora.
The song which plays during the midpoint sequence.
During Kemmer's fave part.
Fave part. And like, I knew this song before from like, oh God, it's on a playlist for one of my favorite characters on Spotify. You know, like this song came on and I was just like, oh, no way. It's very cool.
Yeah, it's a great song. And it got me, I mean, I knew Aurora from like Frozen 2, obviously.
Yeah.
But it got me being like, oh, she's like has other good things that I will also listen to. So
she's got a lot of really pretty music.
Cameron's playing a guitar. And yeah, we don't know how well it's going to pick up, but...
an angle this setup.
There's blood on your lies, the skies open wide. There is nowhere for you to hide, the hunter's moon is shining.
I'm running with the wolves tonight,
running with the wolves. I'm running with the wolves tonight, running with the wolves. I'm running with the...
Hope you enjoyed the episode. Quick disclaims. Drinks and Disney is not affiliated in any way with the Walt Disney Company. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes and follow us on Instagram at Drinks and Disney.
Special thanks to Grace Sy for our music.
Cheers, my Disney dears.